This episode is sponsored by Baby Audio, maker of creative instruments and effects for music production. Baby Audio plugins are all about adding character to your mix, from stylish heavy compression with iHeart New York 2 to radical vocal processing with their latest release, Humanoid. Go to Baby Audio or babyaud.io to learn more and take 15% off any order with the code MIXINGMUSIC. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, TK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Longevity Lou.
Hey, we were just talking about this 4 years in. The longevity is there.
Yeah, we're about 4 years in. I started the podcast in 2019. Lou joined around 2020.
2020. Like in August.
Yeah. So it's been a long time, and the podcast is doing well. We're about to hit 1 million downloads, total downloads.
I'm actually excited for that.
Yeah, we need to do something special. I have a feeling we won't, but we should be doing something special.
We're going to do a special guest episode with Moist Critical.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. With Moist Critical, dude. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is something super simple by concept, and I think it'll be fairly useful, something I've been thinking about recently. I've been on Twitter and Threads a little bit more recently. I don't know why, maybe because I'm bored. No reason. I think it's just like I'm using Instagram significantly less. Anyway, there's a thread about like the most underused tools that I really liked, and this is kind of what triggered my thinking process on this. Lou, let's start with you. When you're mixing, when you're mastering, when you're recording, most underrated tool or plugin, what is it for you? You mentioned a couple before we started, but...
Yeah, I think for me, it'd have to come down to the stock EQ. It doesn't matter if it's Logic or Pro Tools, which personally, I think the Logic one is better.
Just what do you mean by underrated? Because
a lot of people want to reach for like Pro-Q3 or like anything from McDSP or any other brand, right? Because we always associate their brands with like quality. But typically, like when I'm recording, I'm trying to just capture what's in front of the mic and everything. I'm not trying to be too nitpicky in that moment because I'm not trying to waste time. And most times it's just like one simple thing, maybe a resonance in the room that you couldn't just move the mic away from or something of that nature. And you just want to dip down. Maybe you just need a little bit of top end, but I'm also not looking for a ton of processing that might cause errors while recording. You know, nobody wants to deal with like the buffer window popping up and saying, ooh, maybe lower your buffer. But the stock EQs and things of that nature, they use little to no processing. And because of that, you have way less latency issues. They usually sound just fine for what you need it. And you can always swap them out later. But it's one of those where Pro-Q 3 has a zero latency mode, and it's always promoted as something where you can use that while recording. But not every studio you go to has Pro-Q 3. And, you know, they might not have FabFilter at all. That just that simple. So because of that, the stock EQs typically are always available. They work well enough. And like if you're using EQ7 in Pro Tools, you've got 7 band points or, you know, 7 EQ points in general, not band specific, but they do have a little bit of limitations, which can be a little bit annoying. But how many times do you need 7 points in the same range of frequencies? At that point, just swap the mic, you know. But honestly speaking, I feel like stock plugins, as corny as it sounds, don't always get the most love. But they're just as useful, and I use them all the time. That's why, like, even on my vocal template that I give away for free, I've had people email me back saying, like, I thought this was going to have, like, some secret sauce thing. It's like, yeah, this is the secret sauce. Every record I've ever worked on, same template. Doesn't matter if it got me a plaque or not. It's the same template.
Yeah. There's actually with the Pro Tools EQ, the EQ7, EQ3-7 or whatever it is, I use that quite often. Something about the Foley, like the 10 Q, like the max Q ratio or whatever, where it's like the tightness of the curve, pulling out like resonances sounds really good and natural with, with the stock Pro Tools plugin. So like if I use a Pro-Q3, but there's like a couple resonances I want to pull that out, instead of using the Pro-Q3 to pull out the resonances, like these super tight cues, I use the stock plugin, stock EQ. I don't know why. I think it's partially habit. I know I saw Leslie do that. But I genuinely do think that for some reason, Pro-Q3 just doesn't sound as good pulling out like super tight notches like that. And also like it limits you, like the tightest you can go with the stock plugin is 10 Q.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's like, I think that's like a good limitation as well. Again, the only issue with the Logic and Pro Tools or any sort of stock one is like, is you have like three or four mid-range bands, which most of the time is all right. And I think it's like, at the very least, I want to piggyback on you and say that it's underrated in the sense that like utility-wise and sound-wise, tone-wise, sounds fine, totally fine.
Yeah.
And it's underrated because people like hate on it and refuse to use it for no reason other than it's just stock. And for some reason, people have this image where it's like stock stuff must be bad.
Yeah. And that's why I sound like an old head saying like, oh yeah, stock plugins are great. It's like low key. I remember when I first
they're not
the
necessarily
one,
great, but they're definitely
and
underrated.
Just being like, wait, you can switch into linear mode. You can switch into this, that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, that's really cool. It has the analyzer on it. So that was actually nice for like dialing in different things. But the fact that all the points were free range points was really nice and refreshing in comparison to the EQ7. So with the Logic one, I just kind of was like, wow. But even the Logic one was impressive enough of a difference.
Yeah, great. Fantastic, yeah. I have a Logic plugins and stock plugins are super hit or miss for me. But underrated, I think that's right. And this is like a challenge that someday I'll accept. Is like the concept of like, if you don't believe that stock plugins can help you mix a certain way, then I will outmix you with stock plugins. Like if we do a mix battle, anybody wants to challenge me, I will dedicate myself to only using stock plugins and I'll still outmix you. Is like, it's kind of like the idea. Cause at the end of the day, yeah, I do think that the stock plugins are incredibly underrated. That being said, if we acknowledge that, I still think that third-party plugins are better and there's a lot more diversity and better tones, better colors. Like, if possible, I would not want to use Maxim as my limiter, you know, from a sound perspective. Or, like, there's way better distortion tools than just lo-fi, although
or
lo-fi's
great. Or SansAmp.
And then SansAmp, yeah. So, it's more about, like, diversity in tone. But people kind of, like, underestimate. I'm just thinking about this word of, like, in Japanese, we say to, like, nameru. To like, they use this a lot in anime where it's like someone's underestimating my abilities. They say, are you nameteru me? Like, are you like underestimating me? And I feel like, nameteru. So it's like, which like is also, it sounds like licking, to lick. So if you look up lick, it's conjugated the same way. and it might be the same word. Actually, I don't know. I need to look it up, but it's like, it's this idea like, yeah, like you're underestimating. They use this a lot in anime, like in any sort of like fighting or sports kind of anime, any sort of like shonen anime. It's like, oh, like they're underestimating me. And that becomes a power in itself. So it's like, yeah, I feel like people are like, namete iru the stock plugins. Yeah. Anyway.
I love the concept of a foreigner might accidentally say, are you licking me?
Yeah.
To somebody like I... There's a little bit of joy in me from that one.
Yeah, there's something about it. And then, so go ahead and use those stock plugins. There's a lot too with Pro Tools and Logic. Don't avoid those. Like learn those. And because you're going to find, especially if you're traveling or if you ever travel or if something ever happens to your computer and you're stuck with just the stock plugins, you still want to be able to use them. You don't want to be over reliant on your tools and to the point where you're no longer flexible. So you want to get to the point where you're so good that your ear is so honed in on the craft that it doesn't matter what tools you use.
Yeah. Would you agree that at a certain point, like you just have plugins that you never used again? So you're looking at your plugin library and you're like, yeah, to be honest, I don't think I needed some of these.
Yeah, I try to need is a strong word. I like having a lot of stuff and I use them from time to time just to change things up. Yeah. But one of the ways that I kind of like, one of the tricks that I use in order to keep my plugin rotation going is I have a note, like a sticky note. So on Mac, you can have like sticky notes that you pin to your desktop. And I have mine that has a list of plugins that I want to, that I have and haven't used recently or that I just got and need to use. So it's like, cause they, I will not use them because they're not like consciously in my rotation of like plugins that I regularly rely on. I haven't tested them. I haven't tried them out enough. So like I use this list to like remember, oh, I should try this today and figure out. So that's how I learn plugins and keep plugins on rotation. So I am always learning new tools. And so they become front of mind. So I'm always expanding. I'm like pushing my repertoire of plugins. So like I have a very large repertoire of plugins to pull from depending on the problem that needs to be solved. And I have a deeper understanding of how they sound. But yeah, dude, that's underrated. Another thing you were going to mention is Voice of God.
Yes, Voice of God, hands down, my favorite, I guess you could say, resonance tool, I guess is what it's classified under. But it's one of those where like some people saw a YouTube video about how the curve can be recreated in something as simple as EQ7, funny enough, right? But the whole idea behind Voice of God is it amplifies one section at the low end while also tapering off just below that. So it adds like a nice little resonant bump in a certain range, but it also tightens the low end as it slopes it out right behind it too. And I think I could be wrong on this. If you know me with the Voice of God, I like just using it and putting my ear to it. But there might be a slight dip down just before that little bell curve. But, you know, the main thing is that bell curve plus a slope. Yeah. There are recreations of it, like Bark of Dog by BOZ and some of the brands.
It sounds different, though.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't sound the same. And that's why I'm very suspicious of the YouTube video where somebody's like, you can take any EQ and recreate the curve, which, sure, technically you probably can. But the benefit of the Voice of God for me is it's a tool that forces you to use your ear. There's no analyzers. There's no frequency numbers outside of like your center points. And at which point, if you turn it from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock, I don't know where we are away from the center point. I don't know if I'm 30 hertz away from it, 50 hertz away from it. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It's one of those tools where if you're really trying to give some love to the low end while cleaning up your low end in a mix, Voice of God is just a nice tool where it's like, as you enhance one part of the low end, it's tapering everything below it down just a little bit, not too much, unless you go into like extremes, at which point, like you might hear like, once again, a resonance of it at that point. It's just going to be whistling out because you're really boosting the shit out of it. But used tastefully, it's probably one of the most powerful low-end shaping tools that I have. I can use it on kick, voices, bass, guitars, keys. And it's because it can go up to 300 hertz, you can use it on just about anything that even if you rolled off 200 hertz on a female vocal and just needed a little more presence out of her chest, then that sounds really wrong. Pause. but if you wanted a little more presence around 300 hertz, you can use Voice of God for that. And really kind of like shape out the low end in a way that's really pleasant. Like you don't really have to overthink it with this tool, but because it's so simple and it doesn't do anything else, I know a lot of people, whenever I bring up Voice of God, they're like, oh yeah, isn't that that plugin that that one YouTuber said you could just recreate with an EQ? I'm like, yeah, sure. But it changes as you change the amplitude, similar to how the LA2A's ratio and the way it responds changes as you move the peak reduction knob. Which we discovered by
that episode when we read the manual, LA2A manual. That's cool.
It's one of those where it's like, sure, you know, you could recreate it with an EQ curve, but are you going to be dialing in both the slope and the bell at the same time as you manipulate the curve, as you manipulate the amplitude? The louder you want it, the more it slopes and the more it narrows, you know, and that's something that you can't necessarily do in real time with like a static EQ. But you'd be surprised how much of a difference it makes. And when you can hear it in real time, you can actually make better decisions for your low end faster. It's literally just two knobs, three buttons, and those three buttons are do you want it to be center point 40 or center point 200? And if you click them together, it's center point 100. And then outside of that, there's a bypass button. And that's it. You just have two knobs and three buttons.
We interrupt this program to talk about our sponsor, Baby Audio. Stick around to the end to learn about the 15% off code. All right, so this is no joke. Lou and I have been using Baby Audio for years. Quite notably, we both love iHeart New York, the parallel compression plugin, both the first gen and the second gen. We use Comeback Kid, which is their delay plugin. I use that for slapback all the time. Parallel Aggressor is great. They have a tape machine. They have Crystalline, which is a great reverb that is quite different from anything they have out right now. And Smooth Operator. It's another option for an automatic EQ type vibe to smooth things out. All of these plugins are fantastic. They even have a new humanoid vocal transformer plugin. Me and Lou, we use Baby Audio every mix. This is not a joke. We don't just accept any sponsor. And we do highly recommend their plugins. They also have four free plugins that you can check out on their website. All of them are very useful. So at the very least, go and grab their free plugins. And if you want 15% off any order, go to Baby Audio, which is babyaud.io, and type in the code MIXINGMUSIC for 15% off your next order. I haven't used it for anything beyond like bass and 808s, mm-hmm. but for that sort of stuff, the cool thing about that plugin is that you open it up and in its default state, it sounds better. It sounds great. It's like also part of the reason why it's so great. There's something about the rumble, but also a little bit more clarity. It's clean. Mm-hmm. It's not adding any color. It's not fun. It's not super exciting, but it's like very, very sonically pleasing.
Yeah,
I think that's underrated tool. I've never used it beyond bass and 808s and stuff. You've talked about using it on guitar, keys, vocals and stuff. I haven't experimented with any of that stuff, so I can't speak for that, but it's a really good tool. Any sort of, what is that? A high pass filter with a bump?
Yeah.
Resonant bump? Yeah, I think that's like a really good underutilized tool. I'm going to go into my next tool and I want to get, there's a few that I want to share. Mm-hmm. But the first one is more of a, no. I'm going to share the one that everybody wants to hear. Ooh, excuse me.
The L2 Yawning. Limiter from Waves.
The L2 limiter from Waves. Hold on. Actually.
The multi-band
I've been
maximizer?
Using the L2 limiter from Waves on vocals and various different things. Mm-hmm. Like as a compressor. And that is...
Wait, are you doing it where it's like before the compressor or after compressor?
After everything.
Mm.
Wow. Like as a way to, especially on stuff where I'm like keeping a hard eye on headroom, like mm-hmm. the hyperpop stuff, of course. Yeah. But like, even if the vocal comes in mixed already and I just want to retain those peaks just a little bit longer, like a little bit more, I'll do like a dB or three on the limiter. And the cool thing about the L2 is that you could bring the output and the input down at the same time. Yeah. So you can literally just do and then raise the output, whatever you gain, reduce. I think that limiting in general is underutilized in that perspective. I wasn't going to say that, but that's the one we're saying because you brought it up as a joke, but I'm being dead serious. I do think L2 limiter from Waves is underutilized. It's not clean. It's a little bit dirty. L2 from FabFilter is significantly more clean and can actually do clipping, which is interesting in itself. Just for like a dB or two touch, just squeezing it a little bit more, any sort of limiter is underutilized. I was going to say one that everybody wants to hear, a fun one, is like, the more time I spend on it, the happier and happier I am, is this outboard gear that I have, the Kahayan Solid 4000. And the reason why I say it's underrated is because they don't sell this unit very often in America. There's only a few places. Nobody even knows this company. And the only people that know about this company are guitar players that you mentioned because they have the switcher. Dude, holy shit. It's fantastic. Sometimes doesn't change too much, especially when I get the EQ just right beforehand. But if I like for some reason don't get the tonal balance of the song just right, then I throw it through the Kahayan Solid 4000 and then it gets it right. It's fantastic. I can't speak on the 500 series one, but like the 19-inch rack unit, so underrated as a unit. And that's the sort of stuff that I'm sure people wanted to hear. Like, DK, what's your secret sauce? Like, this may be one of them. That being said, it's like, it doesn't work on everything and I don't need it, But when I do have it and when I do use it, it's fantastic every single time. It's relatively affordable too, compared to other things for stereo mix bus processing. And then I was going to say the general use of tilt EQs. I think tilt EQs are underrated. I mean, you take an SM7B and the first thing that you do is like, I use like the Jesse's Mixland tilt because it's like super easy. Link the bottom and top end. So I like link the 200 hertz on the bottom and the 1K on the top end. And then I tilt it. I cut the 200 and I boost the 1K. Just a tilt EQ. Tone Lux has a tilt EQ as well from UAD. Fab Filter does tilt. A lot of these plugins do tilt. Any sort of tilt, like you do an SM7B vocal and just tilt it where you boost the top end, cut the low end, immediately the SM7C sounds fantastic. Way better. It's like a really useful tool because you're musically shifting the focus of a track. So if you have like a really bright guitar, but you want it to be more low, mid, powerful, just like a little tilt EQ where you're cutting the highs and boosting the lows at the same time, you typically have to do less because you're both cutting and boosting. And then on top of that, like you can have like a total complete tonal shift and not have it sound like really weird and mangled. Like it's very musical. And so you can like, It feels like cheating. You're just like reshifting an entire track into a different section of harmonic, like frequencies.
Yeah.
You're like shifting. So like an SM7B vocal, which is like dark or like mid-rangey, all of a sudden you can shift it to be like bright and have it still stay musical. And I do that first with any sort of like vocal, especially like if it's like dark and I want it to be brighter, immediately like a tilt EQ. Yeah, I think it's like way underutilized, like the power and the musicality of a tilt EQ. It's just fantastic. Again, like Fab Filter, most like parametric EQs typically have like a tilt EQ function, like not all the hardware emulated ones. And then Mixland is the one that I like a lot too, because you're flexible, a little bit more flexible. It's not just a tilt EQ. It's like you can change the bands. But it's interesting. I tilt EQs, I think, are like really underrated and should be used more often.
Yeah, honestly, I like them. A lot of times I'll use them on like a keyboard. That's where I usually find them, finding the most use. Main reason is like, I think with keys, a lot of times they record a DI. Like, let's say it's like a Nord Electro 4, like our friend Jonah. You know, we're never really miking up a Leslie or anything, but it's got some great like rotary sounds and all that kind of stuff in it already. So sometimes you just plug it in and it already feels great because the keyboard has always sounded great. But in the context of the mix, you're like, yeah, maybe a little bit low, mid, heavy or something of that nature. And I'll use the tilt on Fab Filter Pro Q3. I'll find like a center point that I really like. Like I'll just kind of band listen. And then from there, I'll set the center point because I don't think... I could be wrong. I've never tried this with Fab Filter. I don't think you can do like specific bands for like the low end and top end and go from there. I think you'd have to do them individually at that point. But for like the static tilt EQ that they have, once I find like that middle, like the mid range that I want to retain and not really change too much, then I'll tilt that until it fits better in the placement in the record. Because usually those keyboards, they already sound good. They're balanced pretty well. And the tilt EQ just kind of gets you back into pocket musically.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Just so it's not like mid, low, mid, heavy, and you're just cutting just to cut. Rather just like reshifting it into a pocket.
Yeah, let's see. Anything else that's like underrated?
I have one for UA, aside from Voice of God. But I think just because, once again, it goes back to like stock. The 670 Legacy. I actually really like it.
Oh, the preamp.
The Fairchild.
Oh, the Legacy version.
Yeah, the legacy version of the Fairchild.
I don't know if new... We talked about this a lot.
Yeah, we talked about the Legacy and non-Legacy.
Yeah, the newer version, which is the non-Legacy version. And then the older version, which I don't think they give out for free anymore. Like, I talked to someone who bought UAD after we had an episode about the Legacy 670 Fairchild. Mm-hmm. Sorry, my bad. I got confused with the numbers for a second. No, and then, Yeah, my buddy said, my friend on Instagram said, like, yeah, I don't think it came with the legacy version. Like, I still can't download it. Still can't use it. So it's like, but yeah, the legacy version sounds great. It's fantastic. I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, to be honest, like, what I like about the 670 legacy is you don't really need much reduction. And if you wanted to drive it a little bit more, it doesn't sound bad. Like, it's one of those, like, few compressors where I feel like you get a little bit of that, like, roundness and compression, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't sound pumpy, at least not too quickly. So, like, a good example of this would be, like, if you've ever used, like, the Shadow Hills Mastering Compressor plugin. Like, once you start doing more than one decibel of compression, it becomes very obvious on either the optical or the discrete. So usually I max myself out at compressing one decibel and it'll do the job I'm after. Like, you're still in that bubble of tone that you were hoping to get, but you can't do any more reduction out of that outside of, like, being very audible with it. Cause there's not too many controls with it, nor is there a lot of controls with the 670 Legacy, but I feel like the 670 Legacy is actually really forgiving for, like, I guess in UA's case, like a stock compressor. Like, it's surprisingly really, really useful. And because of that, I'll put it on, like, a vocal bus or, like, on, like, a really singy track. Like, I'll put it on, like, the lead vocals or on the backing vocals if I want to tighten them up. But it seems to land itself in a lot of places vocally. And instrument-wise, surprisingly good on bass. Like, I know Verimuse are always said to be good for bass and things of that nature. But it's very rare where I don't want to call it, like, super stock, because you have to have the processor. But let's say you bought an Apollo because you wanted an Apollo. It would be nice to have the 670 Legacy with it, you know, because it's something that you can use during the tracking phase. It sounds really smooth. You can use it with zero latency. And then usually when people are upgrading, they're like, oh, yeah, now I got the non-Legacy version. But I'm like, I never heard an issue with the Legacy version. I don't think I've ever once, like, looked at the Legacy version and been like, oh, I can't wait to get
they sound a little the bit non-Legacy. Different
tiny
yeah,
bit.
They sound a little bit different, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Leslie had a conversation about this, about how we preferred the Legacy one for some reason. Not that the other one, the new one, sounds bad or anything. It just sounds a little bit different for some reason.
I think that comes down with all emulations.
And then the last thing, I'll probably add something boring, like a calendar. Like, I use Google Calendars all the time. I think that's, like, really underrated.
That's the most underrated tool in your plugin library.
Trello and Google Calendars, dude. Just any sort of project management and scheduling service.
Let's take it one step further. Zapier.
Dude, Zapier is underrated.
Zapier is underrated.
There you go.
You mean I updated my Excel sheet and it updated the rest of the shit for me?
Yeah, there's a lot of underrated tools. Oh, one last thing I think it'd be good to add in is, you know what's really underrated?
Mm.
Two things.
Friendship.
Friendship. I think is, let's see, how do I want to say this? Two things. Oh, actually, now I'm thinking, now I'm going, like, full meta and, like, a lot of things are blossoming. So I'm just going to, like, pop these all off.
Okay.
I think being curious instead of sure is underrated. A lot of people strive to know for certain. I think being curious is significantly more underrated than that. I think overcoming personal trauma is underrated. I think kindness is underrated. People are really quick to blame others and, like, make up a false narrative. Like, when someone cuts you off, people are very quick to say that person's a dick and, like, create a false narrative. You don't know that person. You don't. The only truth is that they cut you off. I think that that's, especially for Americans, creating false narratives is very overrated, and being open and curious is underrated. I do think reading books is very heavily underrated. Goes alongside curiosity. I think, personal responsibility and accountability is always underrated, will always be underrated. I think stoicism is a little bit overrated. Okay. I'm sorry, I'm blasting off these last things. And then I think on Netflix, Psyche K is underrated.
Oh my God. When are you going to put season two, or is it season two or season three that doesn't have the English dub? And I'm like sitting there and I'm like, they're too fast for me to read and keep comprehension of what's happening.
Yeah, dude, I think Attack on Titan is way overrated.
It was cool like the first two, three seasons maybe.
And that's the thing too. It's like, it's good, but it's overrated. It's overrated. So what I'm saying, it's overrated, doesn't mean it's not good. It means it's overrated.
You know what's not overrated, but headphones. I literally had a conversation with somebody this week where we were talking about acoustic treatment. They were planning on buying the Manny Marroquin headphones. And the reason being behind it was they're like, you know, I never really thought about buying treatment until now. And I'm like, you know, headphones are still amazing. Like, even if you buy treatment and have to get used to new monitors and new this and that, like, your headphones are your tried and true. He's like, yeah. I'm like, you're still going to be referencing off of your headphones because they're your tried and true. But a lot of people I have the nicest monitors. It's like, well, how's your room is now a factor. But headphones, you don't have to worry about your room. You don't have to worry about anything other than your D to A and your cans.
I do think headphones are properly rated, neither underrated or overrated. I think it's more of like a cultural stigma. Like, people like either hate them or love them. It's very divisive. And I think that in that case, it shouldn't be. That being said, you'll never see me using headphones on purpose unless I'm referencing. That's partially not because I think speakers are superior, but because I'm used to them and I like the sound of them. So I would produce less quality work if I mix on headphones. I think use of subwoofers is underrated. We did an episode about that. Let's see, what else? Now I'm just like quick shot firing.
Reference playlist.
Referencing while mixing is definitely underrated. Even if you do it a lot, it's still underrated.
Yeah, I've had people who tell me like, oh, I don't really have a reference playlist because every song is different. I'm like, yeah, that's true. But there's songs you hear every day that you just know, and it helps you kind of like calibrate. It's kind of like the whole idea of like ginger on the side of your sushi plate.
Oh, dude, the one to end this episode with, hear me out on this.
All right. Do I have to wear a shirt for this?
Hear me out on this. Modern shaving sucks.
Okay.
I think our grandparents had it right. The underrated double-edge safety razors. I'm telling you right now, safety razors. Like the old school safety razors, way underrated. I'm telling you. You get modern shaving. Harry's way overrated. Way overrated. Such a bad shaving experience. Single, double-edge safety razors with like real shaving cream, like some Purasso or something.
Are you talking like the Henson stuff?
No. Sure. Henson, yeah, with the modern. Yeah, that stuff too. In fact, I currently use a Henson medium. And, just any sort of double-edged safety razor, way underrated for shaving. Completely different. Another thing too is part of the reason why I started growing the mustache culturally. I don't want to be this guy, but I think having a beard or being clean shaven is underrated. Having this half-assed Jack Sparrow
ingrown,
way overrated. Everybody's doing it. Everybody and their dad does it. Either shave or grow out a beard. I think we're past that. We're past that.
I have to have a short beard. If I do too long of a beard, I look homeless and overweight.
There you go.
Which, funny enough, if I ever want to look like I lost weight fast, shave.
Yeah, so what should be in is looking like you take showers and take care of yourself. That's in. That's underrated. Looking like a well-bathed audio engineer is underrated.
I'm not going to lie, but every time I go to a gig, like for a front of house or something, I like wearing like a 2-button collar shirt and everything. Everybody else is in t-shirts and they're like, that guy. He's clearly the leader of the group. That's the one. Go talk to him.
I hate to say it, but like, it's crazy, like how much of a subconscious effect it has on like first encounters or meeting someone and like the image mm-hmm. they create of you when you're like well-shaven or at least trimmed, like you take care of you're obviously grooming yourself.
Yeah.
There's I've been noticing that for the last year. I've been focusing, like since I started growing out this mustache, now it's been a year. I've been trying to focus on like, you know, having more haircuts, you know, trying to, I'm still not doing as much as I should be, more haircuts, mm-hmm. always like never allowing a day where I'm like lazy with my hair, like always fixing my hair, always shaving consistently. And like, I feel better about myself. Other people treat me differently. Like there is a little bit of a difference for sure. Underrated. That's the point.
Yeah. I guess I'll throw their professional sportswear. Not pro sportswear as in like a football player's pants or fucking jersey or something like that. I'm talking like getting like joggers that look like actual like slacks.
That's underrated?
I think so. I think so because a lot of people will want to be outside. They want to look decent. So they'll get like really cool looking joggers, sports joggers.
So PE teacher pants?
No. Even better. Like, so they look like slacks, but they're actually the same material that you'll wear for joggers or like actual running fits or gym fits. It's the same exact material.
Like jeans that like stretch.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, but they still have like the zipper.
Stretchy jeans.
I have stretchy jeans, but they wouldn't fit the same. Like I just bought some where it's like, they're the same exact material I'll do like squat days with, like same exact thing. Like you could do deadlifts with them or squats, or you can go do whatever you want, go hike a mountain in them, but you can still put a belt around the waist. And I'm like, yo, low key, it just looks a lot more professional wear that one. If you're doing something outside with like a group versus like just wearing joggers, where it's like I feel like joggers lately kind of feel like the sweatpants of the modern dad.
There you go.
Yeah.
Lastly, hear me out on this. This is for all of us engineers and producers here. Mm-hmm. Going to bed on time and getting a proper 8 hours rest regularly, way underrated.
I will say, you know what? That's a throwback to the recording days. And yeah, I agree.
Getting your sleep together.
Yeah. Underrated. If you got to sleep in the middle of the day, but just get a full sleep. I guess at that point, it's not a full night's sleep. Get a full day's sleep if you have to. But like, dude, when we were doing the studio at first and we didn't have a lot of people to call on, we had to do like some night sessions. Staying up till 4 a.m. recording and then having to wake up and be back at it by like 8:00. It's like, dude, you got 3 hours in you and you feel drained. It's just the worst next day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lastly, astrology overrated. All right. Here's the thing. Mysticism in general, kind of underrated. Maybe properly rated. Specifically astrology? Yeah, definitely overrated. I mean, yeah, dude, if you talk to me, I'll be like, all right, what's your zodiac? What's your blood type? Let me read your palm. It's just too not globalized enough. Astrology is way too region-based.
So, no, I was going to say, if you ever want a good laugh, just look at the podcast and some of the YouTube videos that the CEO of Scentbird has been releasing lately. That is sure to give you a good time. I'll just say it like that.
Okay. We're actually done after this.
Yeah.
Memes on X, underrated. Always underrated.
Memes on X.
If you get on the meme side of Twitter or X, it's so good. It's so good. It's so good.
I guess I got to use X more just to use it. Because even when you said X, I'm like, X. I'm like, oh,
dude, ever since Twitter's new face. Dude, I'm telling you right now, something about allowing Elon unlocking
unhinged.
Something going on. It's like really unhinged. X is like really unhinged. And it is... It is scarily entertaining.
Do you think that X is kind of taking the role that Snapchat used to fill?
I have never used Snapchat, so I don't know what that is. I don't know what
Snapchat
role
was
fill.
Probably like
what is
the
that,
most
porn?
No. But unfortunately, nowadays, like basically
selling
like,
drugs.
No, so Snapchat, the whole idea was like you can send each other messages, but they disappear immediately and it notifies the other person if you screenshot or record anything.
Oh, so hiding pedophilia. Okay.
Hiding a lot of shit. So the point where like, if you're like, put it this way, if your parents were to follow you on Instagram, you're like, oh, I don't really post that kind of stuff on Instagram. But if your parents were to follow you on Snapchat, you're like, ooh, they found my account. I don't know. Snapchat has that kind of association.
Being transparent and not changing your personality for platforms or for a specific group of people, underrated. All right. That's
Well, I don't know if you want to post what people would post on Snapchat onto Instagram. You might lose your account. Yeah.
Also,
Snapchat's
dude,
one of those weird Wild West lands.
All right. You know what I did this week? Sorry, we're on a tangent. We really do need to end this episode because now we're completely off the record here. You know what I did? I got pissed off at someone doing like leaving a mean remark for my friend, like a really mean remark. Like you don't say that shit to strangers type vibe.
Yeah.
And I created an anonymous Instagram account and I commented like a devastating clapback. And then I felt like shit afterwards.
Because you had to hide?
Yeah, like posting anonymously, like shit talking on social media under an anonymous account felt horrible. Like, I felt so bad. It was just really, like, obviously doing that is a bad idea, but like, it felt so immoral. And it was like, not like I think everybody who does that is immoral, but it's more like on a personal level. Like, it felt so immoral for me to do. So, like, way overrated, like talking shit under an anonymous account under a Finsta or like
rage baiting. Officially a nameless troll.
Yeah. And I hated it so much. I fell into it. I felt like she deserved it. This like stupid ass, probably depressed as fuck old lady. And like, I hated it. I hated it so much. I wish I didn't do that. Anyway, overrated. On that note, you want to hear more? Yeah,
more
dude,
rantings?
This is the cool thing about the Mixing Music podcast is like, this isn't like, we're not like influencers. We don't care what you buy. We don't care where you spend your money on. I don't care to convince you either way. I'm not trying to make you think one way or another. The cool thing about the purpose of this podcast has always been more for the curious minded to hear learning alongside me, the progressions of me and Lou through our careers. Yeah. And I think it's been really fun to listen back and going through all the episodes of like things that we've changed our minds on, how we've progressed as humans, as people, as creators, as mixers, obviously. And how even things like how we view clients. I think the maturation process and as we kind of get into more bigger and bigger projects, it's really interesting to hear how our thoughts change, I feel like, in contrast from beginning to end of the podcast. Maturing and growing, really underrated. If you want to hear more episodes of the Mixing Music Podcast, you know what's also underrated is the exclusive episodes of the Mixing Music Podcast. It's
That's
so good,
true.
Honestly. With James, James does a really good job curating these episodes. There's like already 200 plus episodes already archived. So not only do you unlock the 200 episodes, but you get two new episodes every single week. And that's mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. $4 a month or $40 a year. Thank you for anybody that's subscribing. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.